So I'd like to welcome Senior Dharma Teacher Mike Wielicki to the front of the class this morning. Mike is used to being in front of the class. He disturbs high school students at Newton Public High School. Seems to take great delight in making them think about things. So always wonderful to have you with us, Mike.
Accurate portrayal. and so good to be here. Sometimes sitting for me is just an exploration of boredom, which is interesting in its own way, but not for me now. My heart is so full, being here with you all. It's amazing. I'm so grateful. Grateful for the Ango, grateful for our temple and our teachers and our practice and for everybody here, for all of you. So we're talking about speech today. I happen to be giving one. And there's the paragraph that comes at the end of this, to me, really was powerful. You should know that kind speech arises from kind mind, and kind mind from the seed of compassionate mind. You should ponder the fact that kind speech is not just praising the merit of others. It has the power to turn the destiny of the nation. So, I was thinking about writing a letter to Obama or something. but then I realized that's probably not what Dogen meant. So the seed of compassionate mind, what is this? We're so lucky to have read some other work by Dogen this morning. In the Genjo Koan, he talks about dewdrops. And it's such a beautiful, beautiful, poetic metaphor. Each of us a dewdrop hanging on the tip of a blade of grass, not quite sure when we're going to fall. And the moon. I picture a moon in the very, very early morning sky, perhaps on its way down. And inside this dewdrop, inside us, this beautiful moon. This beautiful moon, thousands of miles away inside us. Compassion. There's a story from millions and millions of kalpas ago of a group of bodhisattvas that gathered together in a temple. And each of them holding one another in their practice, hearing the sounds of breathing, the temple and the occasional bird song. And maybe a car passing by. And they came from all different realms. They came from the hell realm, where they'd been doing their best to save all beings. and they came from heavenly realms. Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, perfect enlightenment. They came from both places at once. And when the bell rang, they stood together. And one was not feeling well and coughed. And fell. I don't know if you've ever opened a cabinet before with your left hand, and a teacup on the edge of the shelf falls. And before you think, your right hand reaches out and catches it. So it was that a bodhisattva next to our coughing bodhisattva spun and caught him. Without thinking. Here is a moment where our mind can tell thousands of stories about what has happened. Oh, this is so bad. And yet, through the compassionate action of a friend, it turned into a beautiful, loving dance. The one who had coughed and fallen said, "What happened?" And the other answered, "You're okay. You fell." And the openness of this exchange, the one who had fallen saying, "Maybe I fell asleep." And the other saying, "Yes, yes. So beautiful, yes, yes. You were coughing." "I was." Meanwhile, all the other bodhisattvas, hearing the clappers, and doing their part in silence, walking so as not to crowd around the incredible power of that silent action, transformative. The whole incident turned into a beautiful, compassionate moment. Everyone caring for everyone. And for me, this is one of the great deep teachings of this text. That compassionate seed is already within us, moon in a dewdrop, each of us holding each other in our practice, each of us holding the entire universe in our practice. It's a tender-hearted thing for me. There is such a quality of sweetness in it. And also such a quality sometimes of sadness when I'm attentive to the suffering that's in the world, in people's lives whom I love. It's not easy. It's scary sometimes to face these strong, powerful feelings. And yet to recognize and trust this heart unfolding, to trust this world unfolding in our hearts. To trust it and see how we can take moments that otherwise could be so hard, so frightening that we would reject and turn away from, and that happens too sometimes. But sometimes to be able to just be there and be with it and respond. Has the power to turn a nation, has the power to transform our hearts and the whole universe living inside our hearts. Thank you.
So, thank you, Mike. This is the time for our Dharma dialogue, and what we do now is we go around and say our names, and then we have an opportunity to ask questions, make comments, and talk about our practice, about the talk, about this great teaching that we're studying from Dogen. So I'm Melissa.
Steve.
I'm Fran.
Christine.
Matt.
Amanda.
Faye.
Tula.
Julie.
Diane.
Marsha.
David.
Mike.
Thank you, Mike. I feel as held by your words as I was by Dominic.
And as we feel by you.
All of this is really a beautiful demonstration. I'm very touched by your talk of the mutual interpenetration of bodhisattva activity. That some of you weren't here this morning, so you might think this is some ancient story that was traditional in Zen, but it happened early this morning in the temple, and now it will forever be in legend. But just this mutual interpenetration, Ed has been such a steadfast bodhisattva here at the Ango. He's cooked delicious dinners every night, makes the coffee in the morning. Just his presence of the way he holds himself, the way he bows, is so inspiring. And when he had a moment of falling, and to have the person right next to him, in that's now a coma, really, just hold him. And it was truly, in the way that the sun, just what you said, just so truly interpenetrating, and that nobody did anything that wasn't contributing to this whole thing. Mm-hmm. Even, people went, everything was part of it. It was so beautiful. So thank you for pointing it out. And, just deep bows to Ed, who is fine, was totally checked out by the hospital and is healthy.
Except
fainted, which we do sometimes every once in a while. So I'm just full of gratitude for everybody.
I want to respond to Mike's last thing he said, which is the whole universe inside our hearts. First, I just want to say quickly, with regards to Ed, it's very, very, my experience was very strange, because as he was coughing, I had this very, very strong desire and impulse to put my hand on his back to steady him, and it took all my willpower to restrain myself from doing that and say, I'm not here to take care of Ed, Ed will take care of himself. Or Ed won't do what we need to do. And I'm not saying, I'm glad you didn't fall on me, actually. you exercise great intuitive. And then, also a split second since I was right next to him, with Diane's cueing, of course, to realize the most important thing for me to do was to model the keening line, to get moving. And push the people in front of me. So I and just put it out of me. And so that's interesting. That's just an interesting side of it. And of course, you know, part of me would have liked to be the hero, you know, caught him. And, you know, I said, boy, this is one of those times when I wish I was a doctor, because wouldn't be people impressed and says, ever study clear out. But what I wanted to say about I'm sorry for the preamble. I've often one source of sustaining for me in moments of real, real darkness has been to look inside myself and know that at least inside myself, whatever the world looks like at the moment, I so deeply want for every being on this planet, every being in this universe, to grow towards greater freedom through greater connection, and greater connection through greater freedom. That's just my sort of own definition of what growing is. How you know you're growing is you become freer and more connected, and both through the cause of the other, and forth. And this desire is a fairly sophisticated desire, I guess. I mean, it's backed by an emotion of love and desire. But I say, you know, what? Is there some Freudian analysis that I feel that way because I got some extra special love from my parents when I was a baby, and so I'm just projecting that onto the world? I think that's bullshit. I mean, I just don't think that's possible. And certainly there wasn't anything special about, you know, nor is there anything special about me, and I see that same quality or that same desire one way or another resonated in so many others. So I said to myself, how did it get there? I mean, how could it possibly have gotten there? How it couldn't have gotten there unless it was already there, unless it was already present in this universe. So somehow, this universe that I live in, there doesn't have to be a God in it, and it doesn't even have to have its mind on everybody's well-being any more than I always have my mind on my well-being, but that it's possible for me to have that feeling at all, even for a moment, and I have it for lots more than a moment. I mean, it's the feeling animating my life, and that for that to just even be possible can't have anything to do with some particular chemical arrangement of my, well, it does, of course, but it has to do with the fact that I'm not separate. It's my cue, it's my touchstone, it's how I know, because I cannot see how else it would be possible for that feeling to exist if it did not already first exist in just this.
And so well put and personal about this. So many ways to put it, but this bodhisattva desire to save all beings. I love, you know, the image of freedom and connection and both growing, but however we say it, that the teaching is that this is exactly what you're saying, that this is innate, this is who we are as human beings. And I believe each one of us, whether we know it or not, and some great gift to know that, and some great reassurance, as you say, in those moments of total overwhelm, to still be able to rely. Still, I have this wish that all beings may be awakened, may grow in love and understanding.
And it doesn't belong to me.
Right.
Right.
That's the point I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
In some way, the floor has it, and Ed's glasses have it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. And I just want to point out, too, another thing, Nat. I deep bow to you for your restraint and your moving onward with Kinheim. That was quite heroic. I see you as a hero. I mean, I see every single person as a hero, but just hearing your story, I can feel that in myself, that, you know, every muscle of my body wants to reach out, and I don't. Sometimes the bodhisattva activity is backing off. And we don't, you know, and it's before thought. But I think you pointed that out, Mike. There is actually neurological evidence that most activities are before thought, that the thought comes in later and says, makes comments on what happened. I think all of us can trust that in ourselves. And it's partly what all the forms are about, you know. We could have had a situation where people were screaming and yelling and everybody was going crying. But we didn't. We had the form of Kinheim, so we were able to save all beings in that way. So thank you for doing that.
I just want to point out one other thing.
Not doing that.
Yeah. I just want to point out one other thing, too, which I could relate with what you said, was this tendency on my part to pathologize my feelings. And what a different experience to see that they arise out of this interconnectedness and this great compassionate world.
Thank you so much, Mike. That was a beautiful, touching talk. And so you mentioned this, okay? So this, this compassionate heart is already here, and we're reflecting that, and you know, it's such a wonderful thing when we're able to come forward and express that and respond in that moment appropriately. But then on the other hand, you know, sometimes we don't, as you said, you know. Sometimes we're closed and we don't know what to do and we turn away. And it's so hard. I mean, to say, well, you know, this compassionate heart is what, you know, what exists from the very beginning. How is it that I am closed down and turn away? And very hard to be compassionate with ourselves in the face of that, as you briefly pointed out. And I just wanted to highlight that, because it really came up strongly for me that sometimes we do, and sometimes we don't, maybe the seed of compassionate mind is even in the turning away and seeing, you know, ourselves being closed and turning away is also a seed of compassion.
Yeah, just reflecting on something that may be described as different flavors of kindness. you talked about the people helping out and the silence getting in the Kinhin line. And I noticed that, you know, there's a vast variety of flavors, that the Baskin Robbins of emotions and actions in kindness. And I was feeling yesterday when we started this text, I have a little bit of an aversion to the kind speech, and I think just because of the sentimentality that kind of goes with it. And one of my deals I've gone through at various times is feeling like, I'm somehow deficient in the kindness and compassion area. And coming to realize that you know, there are these different aspects to it. I could say, I feel like if I didn't have Mike's real heartfelt warmness, warmth, then I don't have it. No, actually, there is also the silence. There's also other ways of going about that. And actually, so, what I trust most in kind actions towards me, when I was thinking of kind actions towards me, the one more than kind speech, kind listening. It takes a little bit more investment of someone's time that seems to put that in. And kind silence. Thank you for not pointing out the idiotic thing I just did. That's a kind of kindness I can trust. Because I know what they're thinking and they know what I'm thinking and they don't say it.
My grandparents tell the story. My grandmother would tell the story of her meeting my grandfather, and she said on their first date she was so nervous that she couldn't eat anything at all, and he'd taken her out to a nice restaurant, and that she knew that he was the man for her because he didn't say a word about it. Now, I often think of this story as about the repression of my family. It's going on, but you aren't even allowed to say anything about it. But on this other side is this kind of gracious kindness of allowing things to be as they are and not having to make a comment or question or big deal out of it. So just to your point.
So I accompanied Ed to the hospital, and Ed, so we come into this, busy place, and everyone's doing their thing, and Ed was just such a perfect manifestation of kind speech in talking to the people who take all the intake information, the nurse, the doctor, and it was so noticeable to me. It was almost like we were kind of like in this little, little aura surrounding him. And it's like, yes. I mean, like, not in a fake way, but like you weren't like complimenting people or being overly, thank you, thank you. You were just speaking to them very directly, like very much aware of them as human beings and this interaction that you were having with them. And sometimes, like, when we're here for a long period of time, we just kind of forget, how powerful this is that we're cultivating, and it's only when we, get back out there that it's really apparent that, the effect that you were having on the people there. I could sort of watch, and see, but it was a real demonstration of kind speech throughout, so it's pretty subtle.
I have such a good example.
I just want to pick up on what you said about this, like, you can't, you often say you can't judge your own practice. Yes. And I mean, you can, but but it's, we don't have a we're not always looking into a mirror and seeing how we're behaving, we're just living. Mm-hmm. And so we don't see it. And So it's what was part of it, what was so powerful about this for me is that many of you have been here for a week, and I show up and I'm just, oh my gosh, look what's happening here. You can really feel it immediately. It's really, it's beautiful. And, you know, you're just sitting here.
So it looks like from the outside. Yeah. Stuff going on inside. Yeah, that goes back to your point and Dogen's point about the power of this, you know, being able to affect the nation. Mm-hmm. That we don't know. So mm-hmm. you don't know what, mm-hmm. you know, I want to weave in Steve's important comment that everything we do or don't do affects the nation. I mean, it's not our responsibility to control the world and where it's going. It's really just to be awake to this wisdom heart that that all of us have as a birthright, as Nat pointed out, but, you know, don't know that we have it, and that it manifests in things that appear to be sometimes really stupid, wrong, errors, you know. And this thing about not judging our own practice, we can't judge anything we do, and yet we also want to hold it as with as much wakefulness and mindfulness as possible. And, you know, that's why the precepts come in. Because you could imagine taking this whole thing and saying, oh, whatever we do, it's fine, because the world is going for it. Well, you know, not so much. So it's this constant, ongoing, you know, like the translation of the good morning thing. I don't know what's going on. That's what it literally means in Japanese. I don't have a clue. That's so important, that part. And I just want to say one more thing about Julie's Baskin-Robbins activity, because that's why there's so, in Buddhist iconography, there's so many bodhisattvas and Buddha figures, because they all represent all these different things. They're just parts of us. You know, that in Zen we don't believe they have any substantial quality, you know, as gods. And yet, you know, there's this vast universe inside of us. And we get to represent some little part of it. Perfectly. Couldn't do it better.
And to have, I think this is where it takes faith. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of one of the themes that has come up a lot, because can see, oh, gee, Mike really has it. I wish, you know, I should be more like him. Or when you give your Dharma talk, there's a sort of spaciousness of mind and clarity, and I think, oh, that's what I wish I had. but I think our own is in some ways perpetually hidden from us, and we can only sit upright and trust that if everyone else has it, then maybe I can rely that I have it too, even though I think in some way we can never stand outside ourselves. And that it really does require our faith, and every once in a while we catch a glimpse of it, but so nice to be reminded of the different flavors. And for me, one of the wonderful things about Ango is having, you know, so many different people, not just me and Melissa or one other person, but people come up and see what we have to give has already been given before we open our mouth, and we say some words to sort of occupy the time, you know, while Mike's heart is sort of streaming. He could be reading the phone book.
Oh. 617.
And then to this other thread from Steve of compassion being in not compassion. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about one of the other great wisdom stories of our culture is the betrayal of the disciples of Jesus. You know, so Jesus is brought in and everybody says, oh, no, no, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. You can count on me. And all of them forget, you know, this thing that's the most, you know, these are the exemplars of spiritual practice who have given up their whole lives and followed this crazy wild man. And each one of them falls totally into that darkness and denying, as we all do. And I think this great story of Buddhism that you point us to is including even that. Mm-hmm. That even that, how to have faith in our unfaith. And that in the uncompassion, in those moments when each one of us, and each one of us does this, abandons ourselves, gives ourselves up for totally hopeless, that in that it is the at the center, the seed.
Yeah, here it is. I actually have a story. It's related to what you were saying, Steve. I was on the telephone a few weeks ago with trying to figure out how to use a cell phone and becoming really, really impatient. And I was aware that I was becoming more and more impatient. I was aware of not being able to change the behavior at all. Every now and then I backed off, but basically I was not a nice person on the phone. Whoever I was speaking to was quite good through the whole thing, and finally at the end of it I said to her, I apologize for my behavior. And she said to me, God bless you. Oh. And it was so... really cut right through.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You know, I keep thinking as we're talking about there's a story in Zen tradition about the Bodhisattva Manjushri, who's the Bodhisattva of wisdom. He's the one who carries the sword and cuts through delusion, and he has an encounter with another bodhisattva who's called the Bodhisattva of Delusive Wisdom. And it turns out that in the story hinges on the fact that the Bodhisattva of Delusive Wisdom actually knows some things that Manjushri, the great Bodhisattva of Wisdom, doesn't know. And it's really important. We can't do it alone. Like, we can't incarnate all of it. We need each other. So when we get upset, we need somebody else to say, God bless you. And when, you know, and she needed you. Right? It's this mutual thing. It's so important to remember that we're not on this planet by ourselves. So with that...